Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, April 16th. Hopefully, you all got your taxes in by yesterday. Just want to point out, we do have a half day. Hopefully, we can get our half day done as soon as possible, as some of you may have seen on that little sheet of paper that was under your door this morning, last night, or whenever they put it out. There will be fire drills at this building sometime in the afternoon, early afternoon, I think it said. So, hopefully, we could be out of here by then. We'll move forward with this, even though we've asked them to make sure this doesn't interfere with our work. So hopefully we can get done. We do have a couple of things under other business today. I think some of us are aware of what's going on with Southern Window Pane. We do plan to take that up during other business. We will not take it up under Groundfish. With that said, I will kick it over to Chairman Pappalardo for Groundfish. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Groundfish Committee met jointly with the advisory panel on March 31st to review the draft PDT report on the redfish sector exemption. I'd like to keep today's discussion centered on the review the committee asked for, what the analyses show, where the findings are strong, where there are limitations, and what issues may warrant future follow-up. Council members shouldn't see today as the point where the council needs to decide on specific program modifications. That moment will come during priority discussion for this council later in the year. The broad takeaways I hear from that I've experienced in the review, first, that the sector compliance with the program thresholds has generally been high. There's been one probationary instance and no sector has been prevented from participating. Second, redfish remain the dominant landed groundfish species on exemption trips, with pollock the second highest landed species and also the largest discard component, although overall discard to landing ratios are generally low. Third, the observed length frequency work did not show significant selectivity differences between the medium and large mesh categories examined for the species analyzed. And fourth, the sharpest caution flag in the report is around monitoring and enforcement. Trip start hails indicate intent, not actual use, and unobserved subtrips lack timestamps, which complicates both compliance review and discard estimation. I also want to acknowledge that correspondence in your packet raises a different set of concerns than the PDT's bottom line. Some commenters have argued that the program is inequitable for Maine gillnetters, that it may be allowing targeted catch of small pollock or haddock, and should move towards stronger electronic monitoring or gear sensor verification. Now those concerns are now in the record, and they may shape how members think about any future follow-up, even though the PDT's conclusions point towards threshold compliance, low overall bycatch ratios, and no observed selectivity shift in the analyses presented. Now we'll take a report from Robin, and then we can have questions.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair, for that introduction. And so today, again, the focus is receiving a report out from the PDT on the review of the redfish sector exemption, and just to get a sense of where that falls with all of our other 2026 council priorities. Shown here, and in part that kind of having that gap between receiving the report and then the decision point later in the year as part of the priority setting on whether the council might want to consider future actions if there is a need for modifications to the program, kind of twofold to allow time for committee members, council members to consider all the information provided, any additional information, as well as balancing workloads for staff and PDT as they will need to shift to a lot of other groundfish priorities. And so first, just to thank all of our PDT members who contributed. In particular, we had a subgroup of the PDT that focused on their review for this redfish sector exemption program, and really appreciate all the work put in. So looking today really for a discussion, no action required. Again, the next steps would be as part of the council priority setting in the fall for potential future actions if there is a consideration for modifying the program. So the review of the Redford sector exemption, this was included in the action that the council, when the council established the universal redfish sector exemption in Framework 61. It also included having this review process with the objectives, you know, sort of some things that could be looked at, but potentially broader than that, looking at the evaluation of the monthly annual thresholds performance, vessel level performance, bycatch of other groundfish stocks, if there are any observed changes in selectivity, and the purpose, goals, and objectives of the program. And the PDT worked with the groundfish advisors and groundfish committee, input from those groups to develop review metrics that would kind of meet this objective, categorized under different themes: fishery performance, catch composition, program goals and objectives. We kind of categorized them into tier one and tier two, tier one being what we felt were critical to the review, tier two kind of secondary metrics that we try to get to a time permitting. And as noted in the draft report, all of both the tier one and tier two metrics were generally able to be addressed. Then one exception, there was an interest in looking at some of the catch composition with the 4.5-inch mesh that has been allowed under some limited exempted fishing permits. However, those were limited in scope. They're also generally tied to other monitoring programs like maximized retention, electronic monitoring, and so not really allowing enough of a sample size for any analysis, and would have been difficult to make conclusions from given that tie to some of the monitoring programs. And just to note that this review is considered a requirement per the FMP in the regulations, and I guess it was categorized in the priorities as considered a required priority. So the timeline, the review was, it was initial development of the review metrics last year, but then in June, the council paused the review to change priorities to take up the resubmission of Amendment 25, and then added in December this back as a review for 2020, as a priority for 2026, with the PDD conducting the review. We did include some opportunity for sector manager feedback, looking for feedback on how to refine some of the analyses or kind of understanding some of the important points to raise for the committee and council. I think that was a really valuable process that we went through. And then completing that review now, again, reporting out to the committee council. We did have some sort of initial discussion from the committee on potential future actions, but no decision points, as we are expecting that would be part of the 2027 priorities discussion later this year. So the redfish sector exemption program was established in Framework 61 as a universal sector exemption. This allows commercial trawl vessels that are enrolled in sectors to fish for redfish using 5.5-inch mesh minimum, mesh size, but could be larger, within the defined redfish exemption area that's shown here. This was implemented in fishing year 2021. It was implemented after the start of the fishing year. The action was implemented late July. And the kind of the background on this is the program originally started as a annual sector exemption, part of that approval request process that happens through GARFO. There were previous versions of it, and those are, there's details provided in the report on some of those earlier iterations, but notably a version of the program from 2015 through 2019 that was much larger in the area than what's shown here. And then subsequently in fishing year 2020, that the area was much smaller. That was a change made by GARFO to address some of the concerns they were saying with response to some of the compliance around or achieving of some of those thresholds, and subsequently led to the interest in developing this as a universal exemption program as part of a council, as part of the groundfish FMP, and that area kind of now falls in the middle of those earlier iterations. The exemption area includes a couple of seasonal closures in the far western part of it, an area that's closed in February, March, primarily due to the bycatch of Gulf of Maine cod, and then an area that was added as part of the development in Framework 61 on the eastern edge of the area, of the exemption area, that's closed from September through December to reduce the bycatch of other groundfish stocks, and that's mainly for pollock. The council established goals and objectives of the universal redfish sector exemption to, as a purpose to increase the stability and certainty for current and potential participants and improve council control and oversight of the fishery, a goal of achieving the optimum yield of the redfish resource, objectives in allowing the use of an efficient mesh size caught in to facilitate harvest of redfish, increase the harvest of redfish while reducing, to the extent practical, the bycatch of other groundfish stocks, restoring flexibility lost with the 2020 contraction of the redfish exemption area, and removing areas that from the exemption that had little opportunity to effectively target haddock, or sorry, redfish, or limit the ability to achieve the exemption performance thresholds. And so a feature of the program are these catch thresholds and performance standards. So they're monthly redfish landings and monthly groundfish discards thresholds. These apply to sectors, so they're evaluated for the sectors that have vessels and have activity in the redfish exemption area. They're only evaluated on the redfish exemption trips and only the sub-trips that are part of the redfish exemption. And we'll get to that, what that means in terms of the flexibilities around how the program operates. And so the monthly redfish landing threshold means that at least 50% of the sector's monthly cumulative allocated groundfish on the redfish exemption subtrips, those portions that are under the exemption, need to be redfish. And then the sector's monthly total, and that should say the observed groundfish discards, those need to be not exceed 5% of all of the kept catch during those redfish exemption subtrips. There's also an annual redfish landing threshold where sectors the total annual landed pounds of groundfish on the redfish exemption subtrips need to be at least 55% redfish. And so if a sector fails to meet these, the monthly thresholds, either for 4 or more months in the year or 3 consecutive months, or if they fail to meet the annual threshold, they can be placed on a probationary status. They could have the use of the exemption revoked in the future if that kind of continued to not meet those thresholds. And these are monitored. This is something that the GARFO is monitoring for compliance with the thresholds. So there are a number of reporting requirements for the program. Their vessels must submit a multi-species trip start hail to declare the redfish exemption trip, their intent to use that. And then before switching to be allowed to use the smaller mesh in the exemption area, they need to send a multi-species catch report via the vessel monitoring system, VMS, sort of a notification. Once they have sent that, and once they are indicated that they're switching into exemption fishing and are allowed to then use the smaller 5.5-inch mesh, but again could use a larger caught end, they have to remain fishing in the redfish exemption. So it's unidirectional. Once they are notified and they're fishing under the exemption, they can't then fish outside the exemption, but there is the option to fish outside the exemption on a trip before sending the notification and fishing under the redfish exemption. And so pretty, I think, early on in conducting the review, with PDT is kind of seeing through all of this is a lot of challenges with kind of how the program, the structure and the reporting requirements have created a lot of challenges for monitoring for compliance with the program. And as your chair mentioned, this is with respect to the temporal uncertainty, where if the trip is unobserved, there isn't a timestamp or a chronological order for the subtrips, because the VTRs do not have a timestamp. It makes it impossible to link those catch reports to specific fishing activity on the unobserved trip. And there's also limitations with the trip start hail, that it's indicating intent, but it does not necessarily confirm that redfish fishing activity has actually occurred. So GARFO has, as part of their monitoring of the program for compliance with these thresholds, have developed criteria for identifying what are redfish exemption trips, and they're identified using a combination of statistical area, the gear and mesh size, the trip start hail use, and then the multi-species catch reports. These are described in detail, the criteria here in the PDT report. And then to note that identification on the observed trips is more precise than unobserved, because the observer data does have a timestamp associated with the haul. And so something to keep in mind, this review is being conducted at a time where we have really high levels of monitoring, so some of these challenges are a bit mitigated by that. But in the future, if there were lower monitoring coverage levels, this would have a lot more challenges in terms of that uncertainty in matching the trip reports to the exemption activity. This program structure, the reporting requirements also have some implications for discard monitoring. And so it's noting that the compliance for monitoring the discard threshold is monitored via observed discards only, so not calculated discards. And this is not just observed trips, but observed hauls. That's using the described redfish trip criteria that was previously shown to identify those redfish exemption trips. But the discard estimates that NIMS is calculating in the CAMS database use the current discard strata for redfish exemption trips, and that is based on the trip start hail. And so what we are seeing that there are a substantially greater number of trips that have a trip start hail that did not use the exemption compared to true actual redfish exemption trips. And so shown here across the years under the Universal Exemption Program, the second column are the number of actual redfish exemption trips. The far right are the number of trips that use the trip start hail, but ultimately were not did not use redfish exemption on that trip. And so you can see there's quite a lot more trips that do this. And I think generally in some of the discussions with the advisors and committee members, it makes sense that a vessel might indicate its intent, might think it's going to use the exemption, then ultimately something changes on the water and don't end up using it. Then also to note that there is a small or small number of trips that did not fulfill the trip start hail requirement. In most of those cases, they did submit that multi-species report, that notification that indicated when they were switching into the exemption area. So throughout the analyses that the PDT looked at, the different review metrics, we are using the described redfish trip criteria to identify the redfish exemption trips, unless any analyses that note otherwise. This data is for the years under the universal sector exemption, which began in the middle of 2021 and then through in-season 2025, generally through, we looked at in-season through March of this year. So these are considered partial years, so kind of keep that in mind when looking at some of the conclusions. And then just to note in the report, there are some references to the PDT analyses that were conducted on the earlier years under the annual exemption that were conducted as part of the Belvin Framework 61. So just if there's interest in looking back to some of the similar analyses or metrics under past years, that information is there by reference. And so as noted by our chair, this generally seeing that the sector compliance with the catch thresholds has been very high. They're generally meeting these year to year. We've only had one instance of a sector being put on probation, and no sector has been prevented from participating in any year. Also to note that the process for notifying sectors of their performance the catch thresholds has evolved over time. Beginning in December 2024, NIMS has been sending monthly reports to the sector managers that have participation vessels participating in the exemption program. Prior to that, the documentation and notification was less consistent. And we also noted that some sectors have taken corrective action to try to improve vessel performance in the exemption program, or can take action to ensure that their sector doesn't kind of fall under those thresholds that would result in probationary status. So looking at some trends in fleet participation, and I should note on these slides, I've tried to note where we've updated some information since the March 31st advisory panel and committee meeting in response to some of the input and additional information that we could add. Some of this has been updated in the draft report. There's a few places where we added new information to the presentation, and we will be folding it into the final version of the report. So looking at trends in fleet participation, so generally has been stable over time in terms of relative effort, but we have seen some fluctuations, notably a decline in the number of participating sectors from a high in 2023 of six sectors to now in 2024 and 2025, three sectors, similar decline in permits, a high of 19 down to 14 in the current year, a similar kind of increase in the number of redfish trips through 2024, kind of representing the high, and then seeing a decline now in the current in-season 2025. And then we had originally looked at this in terms of days fished. So this is a metric looking at the days the gear is fished in the water, not counting for steam time. Looking at that, trips in 2025 seem to be notably longer. But then what was additionally added here is looking at this in terms of days absent, and those follow kind of a little bit of a different trend, where that the days absent per trip in 2025 is kind of similar to seen in the past under 2022. looking at fleet participation in terms of vessel length class. So this is figure showing here. In each of the years, the number of vessels in the different length classes under the exemption program compared to sector groundfish activity as a whole. And you can see that the majority of vessels participating in the exemption are greater than 75 feet. There are fewer than three vessels under 50 feet in length participating in each of the exemption year. And so to note, the program doesn't have any restrictions in terms of the size of vessels that can participate, but I think generally that redfish is a higher volume fishery, so it generally makes sense to see that these are generally larger vessels that are participating. Given some of the nuances of the program structure, where there's this flexibility to fish outside of the exemption on a trip and then begin fishing in the exemption area, the PDT looked at kind of the breakdown of that. So when we talk about a pure redfish trip, these are trips where all the subtrips, the entire trip is fished under the exemption, a split trip being where they're utilizing that flexibility to fish outside the exemption and then fish under the exemption. And then what we see is across all years, the majority of the trips are these split trips utilizing that flexibility. In terms of kind of that breakdown of the split and pure trips by vessel size class, what we see is that vessels that are taking trips that are entirely redfish exemption trips, the pure trips, are almost exclusively greater than 75 feet in length. We actually don't have a column here to show the 50 to 75 feet, because vessels under 75 feet, there are fewer than three taking a pure redfish trip in each of the fishing years. And then looking at getting into now the catch composition. So this figure is showing the landings on redfish exemption trips, the subtrips. The far right column is the percentage of redfish to landings to total groundfish landings. That's that threshold that's monitored for. We also have values, metric tons for redfish compared to other groundfish and then non-groundfish. And we looked at this by, PDT looked at this by trimester. This is also trying to get at some of the seasonality performance. And trimester was kind of the smallest resolution we could look at with confidentiality issues. And so the proportion of redfish landing, kind of the highest we've seen in trimester three of 2021, of 85% redfish to groundfish landings, and kind of a low of 39% in trimester two of this current fishing year, 2025. Noting that kind of a general pattern where redfish landings proportions are consistently lowest on trimester two, that's in the fall, September through December, while generally still meeting that 50% threshold. And then just to note that there are those seasonal closures, and there could be certainly some influence that those have on both landings and discards by trimester. Looking now at the discards, so now we have the percentage of groundfish to the total landing, so that's that threshold that's monitored for the discards, then the values and metric tons for redfish, other groundfish, and then non-groundfish. And looking at across most years and trimesters, the proportion of groundfish discards is low. It's well below that 5% bycatch threshold. Generally, 1% are lower, with a few exceptions in trimester 3 of fishing year 2021. It's at 4.3%, and trimester 2 in fishing year 2024, that was at 5.6. And we'll see a little bit more about some of the kind of the influence on those here when we start to look at the breakdown by species. And so this has been updated. There was an interest in looking at this information at the trimester level too. So this figure is now showing the exemption trip landings by species by trimester in each of the years under the universal exemption. And so you see that redfish is the highest landed groundfish species across all years. That's the pink bar, which I think makes sense. It's the redfish exemption, followed by pollock as the second landest. That's the purple color. And then haddock as the third highest landed. That's in blue. Notably, in 2024 and 2022, there were redfish landings were much higher than other years. And other groundfish species landings are minimal. Kind of below haddock is white hake, and then other species like cod and yellowtail flounder, American plaice witch flounder are very kind of much lower levels of landings shown here. And then now looking at discards by species by trimester, so kind of the same information, but now we're looking that pollock is comprising most of the discards for across all years. That's again that purple color. By redfish across most of the years, there were a couple of years where haddock discards were higher than redfish. Noting that in 2024, both pollock and redfish discards were notably higher. generally other groundfish species discards are fairly minimal. And then just to note, the proportion of discards and landing is low for all species. Looking at the values here, these are discard metric tons, and 10 metric tons or lower compared to some of the landings values. For redfish, we're talking over 1,000 metric tons, or for pollock as the second landed, being in the couple hundred metric ton range. And then just reflecting on some of those higher trimesters with higher groundfish discard proportions, that in 2024, for example, trimester two, that does seem to be driven by higher pollock discards in that year. You see that in trimester one of that year, kind of higher redfish discards, and then that kind of earlier trimester three in the first year, 2021, where there's doesn't seem to be as much of an influence of discards, and more that the landings kind of part of that equation was lower in that that year. The PDT also looked at the discard rates, so the D to K ratios, discards to Kepdol. These are comparing discard rates between what are the completed true redfish exemption trips, which are in orange here, to the redfish trip start hails. These are trip start hails, but are ultimately not redfish trips. These do not use the exemption. And so looking across this, general patterns, pollock has the highest D to K ratio of all the species, and that's true for both true redfish exemption trips and these trips that are not redfish exemption trips. In 2024, we do see the discard rates higher for pollock and redfish than other years, true across both the true redfish exemption and the non-redfish trips. And this to the PDT signaled that this is likely signaling some sort of year class or a recruitment pulse moving through. And looking at the pollock assessment, there does seem to be a recruitment pulse that could explain those fish would start to recruit to the fishery at that year. A little bit less clear of a pattern for redfish. And the notably, the D to K ratios are consistently different, and they are lower for the true redfish exemption trips compared to the non-redfish trips that have the trip start hail but aren't actually redfish trips across years and species. And so, again, has some potential implications for how the discard rates are determined for redfish trips. So looking at the observer length frequency analysis, and tried to update a little bit or kind of clarify the intent of some of the analysis. I think in some of the discussion with the committee, it maybe wasn't as clear as it could have been about what this was kind of looking to evaluate. Really, the purpose is to determine whether there are differences in the length frequency distribution cumulative probability between the medium, that smaller mesh that's allowed under the exemption, and large mesh, as well as between discarded and landed fish, to evaluate if there has been a possible shift in the gear selectivity to smaller fish with the medium mesh, given there could be the potential for greater retention of sublegal groundfish, which could potentially be a biological concern. Noting that this is an area where we're using a broader pool of data than just the redfish exemption trips. These are all length samples from observer data from calendar year 2021 through 2025. And we did have some definition around a medium mesh kind of with a range of 5 to 5.8 inch to kind of account for some error, large being defined as 5.9 to 7 inch. This analysis was conducted earlier in framework 61 and some of those early years of the exemption. So trying to be a little bit consistent with that to allow some comparison to some of the earlier years. And so just to note that, again, this is about looking if there's a shift in the size of fish that are caught and discarded and kept, and not about kind of targeting or selectivity in terms of the efficiency, I guess, of mesh for redfish targeting. There is some background provided in the report. There was a comprehensive research effort known as the RedNet study that was conducted, and that really ultimately led to the development of the redfish exemption program. So refer there for more information on that. And so looking here, this is comparing the observer length frequency proportions of fish at the different lengths here between the medium mesh and the large. And we looked at this across different groundfish species. We made some updates here to hopefully kind of improve taking in all this information here. So the under each of the stocks, the species that you're looking at, the red color, that is the medium mesh, the black is the large, and that should say 5.9 to 7 inch, apologies on that. The dashed lines, those are the discarded fish, the solid is the landed. And so those two peaks kind of earlier on the left side of each of the figures, those are the discards. And then on the farther right side, the solid lines, those are representing the kept fish. And what we're looking for here is that there's really kind of pretty clear overlap in those curves, which suggests there's not a shift in the size of fish that are being discarded or kept between the medium mesh and the large mesh. And some of these, like for pollock and haddock, those, especially on the discards, kind of overlap almost exactly. And I wouldn't pay too much attention to some of the species like white hake and cod because they had a lot lower sample sizes. So kind of explain some of the weird patterns you see there. To kind of further look at the if there's any evidence of shift in selectivity, I looked at a cumulative probability of the discards at length, comparing the medium mesh, and sorry, that should say red, that those are flipped, that's the red line, the black is the large. And then we also are showing here the sample sizes. So again, noting we're looking at a period of years where we have really high monitoring coverage, so pretty high sample sizes here. And across all the species examined, we're not seeing a difference in the catch curves between the medium and large mesh. They're pretty well overlapped. These patterns are also similar to what we saw in the previous analysis, framework 61, so really suggesting there hasn't been a notable change in the discarding of the proportion of legal to non-legal size fish between past and current periods. We dug in a little bit more detail for redfish and then pollock, kind of being a species of interest. So these are showing observer length frequency proportions for the medium and large mesh for redfish by each of the years. On the top part of the figure, that's the large mesh, the medium mesh on the bottom, the discarded fish are on the left, and the landed fish are on the right. And so generally seeing redfish lengths by mesh size are mostly similar year to year. There's maybe some slight narrowing of the range of sizes in discarded fish, seeing an increase in proportion at 8 inches, or 20.3 centimeters. And then for pollock, kind of the same thing in the figure here, looking across years, possibly some demonstration that there's a decrease in proportions of pollock that are landed at the larger size, greater than 25 inches or 63.5 centimeters. We see in 2025 having the lowest proportions, especially in the medium mesh. And so some kind of overall conclusions here with this analysis for all the groundfish species examined, not seeing significant differences in the observer length frequencies or the cumulative probabilities between the medium mesh that's allowed under the exemption and the large mesh. For discarded and kept, so not suggesting an evidence of shift in selectivity with the smaller mesh. That lack of shift to smaller fish seems to indicate there's low biological impacts of the medium mesh. There are some low sample sizes for cod and white hake, make these conclusions a little bit more challenging, but those length frequencies are still in the same general range. These are similar findings to what was seen in the previous PDT analysis. Those identified the same peak lengths in length frequency analysis and a similar percentage of the discards that were discarded over legal size. We saw some kind of strange patterns that earlier analysis were for American plaice and witch flounder, kind of the opposite of what you'd expect. There was a greater proportion of larger fish discarded with the medium mesh, but that difference seems to have gone away with the additional years of data and more of a robust sample size. And there does appear to be some variability in length composition over time for redfish and pollock, but we need to look at more years of data to see if those identified patterns are persisting. And so looking at, this is operator level performance. So one of the pieces of feedback we got from sector managers is that looking at the operator level is a little more meaningful than the vessel level, since I think it's been described that redfish fishing is very kind of specialized. So these are the, for the operator ID that's reported on VTR, this is the average redfish proportions landings by operator for each of the years. And so these box plots, you're looking at the medium as that, the median value as that horizontal line, the interquartile range, and then kind of your full range there. We have removed outlier values due to confidentiality here. And so the median percent redfish landings by operator is above that 55% annual threshold for all of the years, and focusing on the three full years into the program, redfish landings, median of cross operators, 70% in 2022 and 2024, so kind of a bit higher than that 55%, and kind of similar in fishing year 2023. But you can see that there is variability in the percent of redfish landings by operator across all years. And in those kind of three full years, a little bit more variability seems to be occurring in 2023 than in some of the other years. when you look at the operator level performance for the groundfish discards, so this is the proportion of groundfish discards to total landings, there's a lot less variability here by operator, and that median groundfish percent groundfish discards, again, well below that 5% threshold in the 1% to 2%. We do seem to see some variability. It's a bit greater in 2024, and that was that year that had some of those higher discards of both redfish and pollock. And looking at observer coverage, kind of the variability in the percent of observed trips by operator, generally in some of the more recent years, the median percentage of observed trips by operator is quite high, over 80%, but there is pretty notable variability in the percentage of observed exemption trips across by operator across all the years. Looking at monitoring coverage for redfish exemption trips and how that compares to total across groundfish fishery, both target and realized coverage levels, these are generally matching, reflecting the overall monitoring coverage levels, and have been pretty high in recent years. You can see 82% of coverage in 2023. Currently 86% in the in-season 2025 compared to similar values for the groundfish fishery overall. Kind of the biggest differences in 2024, we see the around 66% of redfish exemption trips were observed when the total groundfish fishery realized coverage level was 85%. And so looking at some one of the metrics is around some of the economic information. So looking at the in this table here, redfish landed pounds and redfish revenue, that's from redfish exemption trips, and then also compared to all groundfish activity. So across the years of the universal exemption, around 34% of redfish revenue has been generated by from exemption trips, from a low of 17% in this current year to a high of 50% in 2022. Redfish is comprising 71% of groundfish landings and 52% of the groundfish revenue from the exemption subtrips. Just for some context, in some of the earlier years under the annual exemption, redfish landings were kind of varying between 65% to 75% of the landings, groundfish landings on exemption trips. So this is kind of in that same range. In terms of looking at the vessel level, so there's kind of quite a bit of variability at the vessel level in terms of the percentage of redfish revenue that's generated from exemption trips. So kind of thinking of this and their reliance on exemption trips as a source of redfish revenue, and that's across all of the years. This was another piece of information that the Groundfish Committee and advisors were interested in for some additional context. So looking at monthly redfish prices across the years of the universal exemption to try to provide some context for some of those revenue values. And redfish per pound ex-vessel prices have been around 50 cents to 80 cents range since the start of the exemption. Harvest of redfish notably has been bolstered by USDA purchase programs that have occurred, and those have totaled around 1,600 metric tons of redfish that were purchased under those programs. There's additional information interest from the committee kind of looking at pollock as the second most caught groundfish species on the redfish exemption subtrips. So similar information here as redfish, but now provided for pollock. So 12% of pollock revenue is generated from exemption subtrips. Pollock is comprising 18% of the groundfish landings and 25% of the groundfish revenues from exemption subtrips. And for context, in the earlier annual exemption years, pollock was making up 17% of groundfish landings, increased to 30% in some of the later years. So this is kind of a decrease from some of those earlier years under the annual exemption program. We do have some additional slides and I didn't walk through here, but that also shows some of a lot of variability in terms of pollock ex-vessel prices, as well as the variability across the vessel level reliance. And then looking at groundfish landings overall, 8% of groundfish F&P revenue has been generated from exemption subtrips, and the vast majority of exemption subtrip revenue is from groundfish F&P stocks. There's not as much variability here at the vessel level, where the majority of vessels are generating under 30% of their groundfish F&P revenue from exemption subtrips. And then looking at some information, not just on operating costs, this is information that the ATSI monitors would collect, and seeing that median operating costs on exemption trips generally been in the $15,000 to $20,000 range on an annual basis. Operating profits, which is looking at the revenue minus those operating costs for redfish exemption trips, have been in the $60,000 to $70,000 range. And then we do see a drop off occurring in 2024. And then we have some additional information that we kind of looked at this at in terms of some of the comparing between those pure redfish exemption trips and some of the split trips. And you can see that in the some of the extra slides. And then finally, there was an interest in getting some information from enforcement. So NOAA's Office of Law Enforcement and U.S. Coast Guard provided general information on enforcement regarding the redfish sector exemption program. To date, there have been no enforcement actions that have been taken specific to the program. Generally, how offshore enforcement with redfish exemption area would work. This is conducted through monitoring VMS data, checks for compliance there, and then they would be conducting ATSI boardings to check for compliance with regulations. They note that ATSI boarding is one of the only ways to confirm a vessel is not actively fishing with the smaller mesh in area not permitted, and that was the primary purpose. There was a Coast Guard targeted operation that occurred in late 2021 to specifically look for compliance with the exemption program. And they also note that mesh size regulations they consider enforceable, but there are challenges with enforcement. This is kind of generally the case, but also specific to the exemption program, where there's an allowance of having gear with a smaller mesh and that being stowed on the net reel, and it can be difficult sometimes to prove use. So some of the conclusions kind of across all analyses, and that theme of the structure and reporting requirements really make the monitoring for the compliance of the program challenging, and that's with this identification of the redfish trips, exemption subtrips not being kind of readily available, and it requires these additional steps and these criteria. And this is really a product of the interaction of the regulatory language and the constraints of reporting, where vessels are required by the regulations to submit the trip start ill in order to participate, but they're not compelled to then participate in the program if they submit that trip start hill. They may use the trawl gear with a minimum of 5.5-inch mesh, but they're not required to. They can use larger when they're under the exemption program. And the kind of what the signal that this that they are under the provisions of the exemption program is that notification, that catch report that's submitted, that has a timestamp, but the VTR subtrips do not, and that's where that challenge is with linking the subtrips so that you can link them directly to specific fishing activity unless you have the observed hauls. And so really, again, the theme where currently under high levels of monitoring coverage, these challenges are kind of mitigated by that. You can use the observer data to more reliably match the different subtrips, but under lower monitoring coverage, the challenges would be a lot greater. Then also implications for estimate of discard rates, because that current discard strata using the trip start heel as the basis for estimates for the redfish exemption program, but those not all trips that use the trip start heel ultimately use the redfish exemption. And similarly, under high levels of monitoring coverage, this is less of an issue because we're getting discard information directly from observer data on most of our trips. But under a future, if we had lower coverage, you could start to see an introduction of error, uncertainty, and discard estimates. These may not be representative of the true actual redfish exemption activity. Some kind of across the board conclusions the PDT is reflecting, again, sectors consistently meeting the thresholds across the monthly and annual landings and discard thresholds. Redfish, the highest discarded groundfish species, pollock being the highest landed species, pollock is the second highest landed, discards of all species being generally low, not seeing differences in the size of fish discarded and landed between with the medium, the smaller mesh and the large mesh, so suggesting no evidence of a shift in selectivity to smaller fish with the smaller mesh. Fleet participation, generally stable in terms of relative effort. We do see some fluctuations in terms of participating numbers of participating sectors, permits, and trips. Most participants, vessels participating are greater than 75 feet. Most of these trips are using this split trip flexibility to fish outside the exemption before fishing under the exemption. while participation is low on an annual basis, the vessels that participate do have are generating a substantial portion of redfish and groundfish from these exemption subtrips, kind of speaking to some of the reliance at a vessel level on the exemption program. Generally, a sense that the metrics seem to be indicating the program meeting its goal, where we have a balance of allowing use of efficient mesh side to target redfish, but also reducing to the extent practical bycatch of other groundfish stocks, seeing those low discards and lower landings of other groundfish stocks, and increasing the stability and certainty for participants, and noting that seeing minimal landings and discards for the other groundfish stocks under the universal exemption might suggest that this current exemption area and the seasonal closure areas have been effective at reducing the bycatch of other groundfish stocks, especially white hake. So bycatch of other groundfish stocks, white hake, pollock, haddock, and cod were primary drivers in GARFO reducing the size of the area under the annual exemption in 2020. And that led to that development of that additional seasonal closure under the current exemption, and it seems to be resulting in lower catches of some of these other groundfish stocks. And finally, the trip start hail is not a reliable indicator of actual redfish exemption trip activity, since we have a large number of trips that use that but don't ultimately or use the trip start hail but don't have ultimately use the exemption. So it appears that the requirement isn't meeting its intended goal, and this has implications both for the monitoring of compliance of the program and discard estimation. And we also heard from enforcement that it generally doesn't enhance their enforcement capabilities. So the groundfish advisors and committee had a really great discussion, a lot of engagement from everyone, including public and a lot of active redfish exemption participants. There were suggestions to improve clarity of information in the report and modifications to existing analyses that I've tried to point out in some of the slides here, some interest in additional analyses and kind of initial ideas shared for possible modifications in the future. We did have public comments, as was noted by the chair, concerns around enforcement of mesh size requirements. I think kind of specific with the exemption program and also to some extent more broadly, to note that there is an enforcement committee meeting planned for next month. This is one of the topics planned for that agenda. And there was kind of bore out of a groundfish advisory panel discussion statement that occurred last year related to a discussion on the redfish exemption review. And then just finally, PDT is reflecting on some of the ideas that were shared for possible additional analyses, that some of these would appear to be analyses that could be conducted in the future, in a future action, should the council decide to take up action to modify the exemption. For example, looking at the operator level performance, there's interest in looking at kind of the tenure, the experience level of the operator. This could be helpful to inform if there was an interest in considering changes to the catch thresholds. Some suggestions to look at catch composition by looking at tow length and day versus night, some of the observations around behavior of redfish to other stocks. And this could inform if there were other changes to the program. One interest has been heard about additional flexibility to kind of to fish in the area and then leave the exemption area if basically their vessel isn't encountering higher levels of redfish. So these would be, I think, suggested analyses that could be explored in the future, depending on the extent of modifications the council might want to consider. So again, more of an opportunity to kind of take in all the information in the PDT report. I think hopefully we had a great discussion, I think, with the advisors and committee. And if there's any kind of further questions or discussion today, but no immediate action needed, just to kind of be thinking about potential next steps in the fall for potential recommendations for any priorities that would look at potentially modifying the exemption program. And so with that, I can take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Freedy. Before I open it up to questions and comments from the council, I just highlight again, we're not looking for any tasking. We're not looking for any. This is the review. What I actually will be looking for is a consensus from the council saying, yep, we completed the review. It satisfies the priorities that we put on the table, and it satisfies the regulatory requirement to do the review. So, like I said, if there's more interest in moving something forward, that would come under priorities, and that would be taken up next year. So I'll now open it up to the council. Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Robin, and the PDT for all the work that you've done on this. We finally got to this point after putting it off for a little bit. So I just wanted to ask you, could you put up the slide for the what's approved under Framework 61, which is the area that the exemption is now, and then the closure areas for cod and other stocks. Can you just put that up? Thank you. I was going back through the, I don't have it printed out. So this is one of the very early slides. I'm sorry, I don't know the slides, like all the way back, all the way at the beginning. Okay, so just in looking at this, and I have to kind of make it a little bit bigger on my screen because of my eyes. All right, so the dark black box is the cod closure, and then the little dotted seasonal closure two all the way out on the Hague line is the one that's for other crownfish stocks, including mainly pollock. I'm just curious, is that seasonal closure two that was included in Framework 61, is that based on old data? I know when the agency reduced the size to include a smaller area for universal exemption, there was a lot of analysis that was done. I'm just curious if there were any other considerations for seasonal closures that would come into play that could potentially benefit a future program that we may consider at another time.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So that it is that triangle area that's way out on the Hague line, and that was developed as part of the universal exemption in Framework 61. So there was analysis conducted to support that as an area to try to reduce some of the catches of other groundfish. There's some figures. If you look at some of the references to previous analyses, kind of ratios of other groundfish stocks landings to redfish, and those were conducted under the, I'll have to check, generally those went 2015 through 2019, out of the universal years leading up to the universal exemption. So in terms of if there could be, there were, so I would say we have not, I think one thing we haven't really heard much in the discussion is sense that these areas aren't working or there could be a desire for additional ones, but that is certainly something that there was interest in looking as part of the modification. If the council wanted to consider modifications, that's something that could be looked at.
And then the other quick question I had, is there anything that the agency under their authority to make modifications, and this I'm not trying to take away the flexibility, it's very important for the offshore boats to be able to go into and out of kind of their intentions of how they're going to fish based on what they see on the water, what the price is. So that flexibility for these offshore boats is really, really important. But is there any potential reporting requirements or additional reports that could come out of some of these trips that would be that the agency would have under their authority that isn't codified or needed to be changed under a Framework 61 measure that may help with future analyses? Just a thought. I don't know if there's anything that can be done without having to change regulations, but just a thought as we look at modifying this program, which will take a while through a separate council action and priority. And I just wanted to say again, thank you for doing this. I think it's great. It's good to see. I know, of course, when you do a review, certain issues pop up and there may be future discussion of modifying these areas, but it's good to see. I mean, obviously, redfish is extremely important to the groundfish fishery. And it's good to see that, that's meeting the goals and objectives with the program, and we can have a discussion about modifying those later. So thanks.
Thank you for that, Ms. O'Dell. Mr. Airstad.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation, Robin. I was intrigued by slide 36, simply the reference to the USDA purchasing, I guess, over this period, 1,600 metric tons of redfish. So, yeah, do you know more about that and, like, how the pricing works? Because I imagine when government buys fish, they enter a contract and prices don't change. But I guess it's just, you know, personal interest, and I'm sure there are other fisheries that might benefit from some support like this. And do you know what the disposition of those fish is ultimately? So this is all new, and that's why I flagged it. So any info you have would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. I can try to share a little bit more about what I'm aware of, and can certainly check back in with PDT to dig into more information. My understanding, I think these programs generally started, I think, around COVID, following 2020, and were to kind of, you know, support industry when there were a lot of losses in markets. Generally, they were supporting, I think, redfish. There were, if I'm not mistaken, some other programs for other stocks like haddock, possibly pollock as well. Kind of a theme of stocks that are maybe or at the time underutilized. In terms of a disposition, where they go, I think some of these were purchase programs that would support like school lunch programs and things of that nature. I'm not sure that I know as much about the pricing structure, but can certainly follow up and get more information. I believe there are reports that we can link in. But I think there are, I would say, I think there are council members who have more understanding that could probably share a little bit more on that.
Actually, I'll come to Mr. Pitney. I think there was a question put to the agency beforehand.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to respond to Jackie's question about, you know, what authority the agency had would have to maybe make some changes. I mean, I'm not 100% clear what changes you were envisioning, but basically, you know, back when this was a sector exemption program, we would have had more opportunities to work directly with sectors and kind of change the reporting structure. I think once it became, you know, universal exemption, it's a council program. It really is at the, you know, will of the council. So I think if there is a desire to make some modifications to the reporting structure, that would best go through the council process.
Ms. O'Dell, I think you had some response to the pricing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Pitney, for that answer. So the USDA programs for purchasing seafood has been something that has been really capitalized by the West Coast for a period of time. I don't know exact dates. It was during COVID, as Robin had mentioned, that there were some leaders in the fishing industry within this region to get USDA groundfish, so pollock, haddock, and redfish, to get our fisheries be able to be qualified. It really has helped our fisheries to increase price. Because when you see when the USDA program would stop or the purchasing would be filled, the price of many of our groundfish stocks just collapsed. So it would be, our fishery became very, very dependent on those USDA programs. And, you know, for an organization like NSC, we saw it helped not only the people who were actually part of the, you know, the purchasing, but, you know, it helped to raise the floor of the price for everyone and all small boats, big boats that were participating. Just, I don't know if anyone has seen the news, but USDA, as of maybe yesterday, declared that they're going to have a new seafood division, and this has been discussed for many years, where they're going to begin to discuss opportunities for fisheries across the country. So there's going to be an opportunity for New England to be able to build on these programs, hopefully for other fisheries, groundfish stocks as others as well. So there's an opportunity there to really help improve the profitability for our fishery moving forward. So I hope that's, I can't tell you the exact poundage and price that we got, but it's been hugely beneficial to the fleet overall. Thanks.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, Robin, can you go to slide 25, please? The selectivity slide. I got 25 here. Go to 26 then. Okay, right. It says 25 on my page here. I'm looking at maybe an old report. It's an older version of it. Yep, Yep. So the length frequencies with 5.5, the difference between 5.5 and 6.5 is almost indistinguishable there. Is that what the PDT expected to see when they started looking at this, or did they expect to be able to find a difference?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think what maybe to say you would hope to not see a difference. If you saw a difference, then that might suggest that there's a, you know, biological concern that you're seeing a shift to selectivity of smaller fish. We did not see this in framework in the earlier analysis. There was lower sample sizes then, so you know now it's, I think, still made that conclusion, but less of a robust sample size to make that upon. Now with much higher monitoring coverage, so much higher observer samples, and can feel a lot, pretty confident in saying that there isn't a difference here. So this is really, again, looking at the shift, a potential shift in the size of fish, and not about sort of the targeting in terms of numbers of fish. And so
this doesn't show us that you can actually catch redfish with 6.5 better, as good as you can 5.5, like.
Correct.
I think was the impression that some people got during the discussion at Groundfish. I didn't take it that way. I took it as a selectivity peak. But so I just wanted to make sure that people understood that because I mean if you saw the difference between 5.5 and 6.5 inch with redfish. So I have not participated in the redfish program all year, and I have maybe 3,000 pounds worth of redfish landings this year. Actually, I think it was 2,900 and something. So I personally cannot catch redfish with a 6.5 inch caught in. I would need to put it on my 5.5. So, okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying, because I reflected afterwards from the committee meeting, and I realized that sort of thinking, talking about it in one way, and realized later that I think committee members and advisors were kind of interpreting this or thinking this from a different question. So yes, this is specifically about if there's any shift in the size of fish that are caught and discarded and landed, which we don't see. And again, that would be more suggesting that if you saw a difference, there might be a biological concern if you're shifting to smaller fish. In terms of, you know, analysis of catchability, mesh size would be a different study in design, and we sort of refer to those earlier, that red net study that was a thorough look at comparing different mesh sizes for efficiency of redfish targeting. So thank you for raising that.
Thanks, Robert.
A quick question or two from Mr. Smith, and I will go to the public.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Robin, thanks for the response to the last one. One of the questions that I did have was regarding this issue of sort of how we were all understanding those selectivity curves. And I think in the conclusion section of the report on the third bullet, it does say there's no differences in the size of fish discarded and landed between the two meshes. So I think between looking at these graphs and reading that sentence, it suggests that there is no difference in the performance of the nets. And I had a lengthy discussion with Terry about it afterwards. So I was one of the folks confused by that. So maybe just some different language in that summary bullet to clarify what it is that those things show would be helpful. That's one suggestion. I do have one other question too, but I just wanted to touch on that first.
Yeah, thank you. I think I'll try to, we can, so I should also say we have, you've received the draft final report. We will plan to kind of finalize that report and, you know, would share that with the committee and council, and we can definitely take that consideration. Trying to be mindful of, we're talking about the size of fish in terms of lengths versus kind of volume, I guess, of fish. Yeah.
Thanks. The second question I had was regarding the table that describes the performance of the program by trimester, and it seemed pretty clear from that that in trimesters 1 and 3, exemption program did, you know, very well with respect to the performance standards and the thresholds. Trimester two wasn't the same. It seemed like it was barely above the 50% threshold in most cases and below it in one. I'm just curious if through the course of the analysis there was some insight into why it was that the exemption program was having a harder time meeting those performance thresholds in trimester two relative to the other ones.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So one of the extra slides you have, I think this was a question that came up from the committee to try to understand, you know, when you see the lower proportion of redfish in trimester two, is that because redfish landings are lower, or is it that the landings of pollock, for example, is higher? And what we see is that there isn't really a difference in the proportion of pollock in trimester two. It's that the redfish landings are lower. So not that the kind of change in that, you know, having a challenge of meeting that threshold in trimester two, it's not that you're seeing higher landings of other species compensating for that. It's just that there is lower redfish landings. I think what we've generally heard from some of the advisory panel and participants in the program, and that kind of match what they expected, that generally it can be more difficult to, I guess, encounter redfish in those fall months. This is that period of time where we do have one of the closures that could have some influence there. So I think if you can, you know, perhaps dig into that a bit more, those are just some of the, I think, observations we've had, is that it does appear that there's more of a lower landings during that time. I think we'd also have to look, I think this is generally also that there's just lower effort then, so there's fewer vessels that are then, you know, contributing to that sector's threshold. So kind of a combination of all of those things.
Ms. Ware, and I do apologize, I had you on my list and did cross you off.
All good. So I just want to say thanks, Robin, for being reactive to some of the committee questions on this. That was great to see the additions. So a question on the back to the size selectivity. Appreciate the emphasis that that's broader than redfish trips. In terms of data, I assume it's still just groundfish trips as opposed to other fishery trips.
Yeah, sorry, I should have. These were groundfish trips. We did, and I didn't read through this, but on the slide, we did limit it to the Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank. Try to be more honed in on the redfish exemption area.
Okay. I've been kind of chugging my way through the RedNet program report, which is a little hefty, but they, from what I can see, they did see differences in size selectivity in that program. So I'm curious if the PDT had a discussion of why they saw it in that program, differences between 4.5, 5.5, 6.5 mesh, and we're maybe not seeing that come through in the data now.
It's a great observation. I don't know that we've discussed that specifically. I think we'd probably have to kind of also dig back through some of the details in that study and think about that a little bit more. So yeah, I don't have a ready answer, but I think would be a question we could further look into, and certainly could be worth looking at. I think it is helpful to think about the kind of the evolution of the mesh in the program, where it started out as 4.5-inch meshes being kind of more optimal, but then you kind of have some for targeting redfish, but a little bit more challenge with that bycatch. And if you look at some of there's some background on the exemption, some of the earlier years, it kind of bounced between 4.5, I think 6 at one point, 5.5, and kind of moved all over the place. But as far as why we might not be seeing as much of a difference here, observer data, maybe dig into a little bit further. I think I think we do have some kind of caveats around, you know, kind of changes in selectivity can be influenced by a lot of factors, targeting behavior, and we'd really have to kind of, you know, characterize that a lot more.
Thank you for that. I'll go out to the public. Any questions, comments on the review? Lucinda Newkirk.
My name's Lucinda Newkirk, and Knoop and I have a commercial fishing business. And I just had a question about the with the medium mesh and the large mesh. So I was wondering, did you get the mesh size from the vessel trip report? like for the medium mesh and small mesh?
So the observer length frequency work, if you're referring to that, that is based on observer data. So that's the observer mesh sizes. In terms of the kind of the pool of trips that we talk about GARFO determining which are the redfish exemption trips, that's based off of the what's reported on the BTR.
So with the observer, did they measure the lengthener and the caught end or only the caught end?
I will speak to this, but would want probably to verify with an observer program staff, but my understanding is they're measuring, those measures are for the caught end measures, measurements, and that's what is reflected when we're in this analysis characterizing what is medium mesh, that's the caught end mesh measurement.
Okay, well, I just like to say that what I think John Parpolato started off at the beginning is that we've only had, or maybe it was Robin, sorry, but we've only had one boarding in 13 years. And I don't think anyone has ever measured the mesh size. So when the observer's on the boat, they're not supposed to be enforcement. They are only supposed to be like biologically sampling and measuring the fish. And enforcement is the only entity that is supposed to board the boats and measure that extension. And I've asked Glenn Chamberlain if it was possible for the observers to measure the extension along with the caught end, and he said absolutely not. And so these mesh sizes that are recorded here, they're not necessarily what mesh was being used if the only mesh size that they measure is the caught end, because the extension is way longer. And we know in pictures or just here, you know, from talking to fishermen, that they do choke off that caught end. And we have a picture in my comment of a 4.5-inch extension. And so I feel like these measurements, if you're only taking your data from a VTR and there's only been one boarding, we actually don't really know what that mesh size is. And what I felt like we should have seen on these is that they overlap exactly. And a 5.5-inch mesh is going to retain smaller fish. And a larger mesh is going to have more large fish and not that many small fish. So I feel like what's happening is they're using the same mesh, and it's probably from the extension when they choke it off, and that it has nothing to do with the caught end. I have another picture of, in my comment, of a boat where they're hauling back, and you can see that the redfish are choked off, and you can see a totally empty caught end at the end of it. And you know, and that wasn't even a photo from enforcement. That was actually a photo from a private person. So I feel like as far as the enforcement goes, we can't really count on the fact that these mesh sizes are accurate. But thank you for my comment.
Thank you, Ms. Newkirk. I believe Dr. Hare may have some responses to your questions about observer program duties.
Yeah, just to answer the question, it's the observers do measure the caught end mesh size. They do not measure the extension, as was mentioned by the Ms. Newkirk.
Thank you. Eben Newkirk?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eben Newkirk. I'm a commercial fisherman with two active fishing boats in the Gulf of Maine. I have watched over the last few years with my own eyes the pollock stock becoming smaller and smaller. With less and less medium and large fish, we continue to wonder why, or we can actually see the data and the numbers we collect every year to understand. In 2009, there were 94 active gillnet boats, and now there are 18. In 2000 to 2009, we landed around 4 million pounds of pollock per year. Pollock was the number one ground fish stock in Maine last year. We landed 250,000 pounds of pollock, a far cry from the 4 million. Last year, Maine had four fishermen set small mesh gillnets, 6.5-inch. Why this sudden decline, do you wonder? Well, the redfish program started in 2012. The redfish exemption program has devastated the pollock stock and the gillnet fishermen here in southern Maine. The redfish program is a trawler-only fishery. The small mesh size and they are allowed to use made it so that they could catch upcoming year classes at least 2 years before gillnets could stop the pollock. I think the redfish boats are using such small mesh that they are catching the pollock before they have a chance to spawn. That's why our spawning spock biomass is so diminished. I think the redfish exemption program violates the MSA National Standard 4, which requires that allocations of fishing privileges be fair and equitable. This special redfish exemption program gave trawlers a specific pathway to use small mesh and remain profitable. Gillnetters were excluded from using 5.5-inch mesh, and 81% of the gillnetters are gone out of business now. National Fisheries Service and the Council created an inequitable distribution of opportunity. I also think the Magnuson-Stevenson Act National Standard 8 has been violated. Conservation and management measures shall take into account the importance of fishery resources to fishing communities in order to provide for the sustained participation of such communities and minimize adverse economic impacts on such communities. There was no reason why the gillnetters couldn't have also used a 5.5-inch mesh to catch redfish and groundfish. But we now see this was never sustainable to begin with. The 5.5-inch mesh catches the fish when they are too small and haven't spawned adequately. When a specific gear restriction, the 5.5-inch mesh results in a massive drop in landings like the shift with the pollock stock to a fraction of what we used to land. This signals a failure to sustain the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment, Mr. Newkirk. Knoop? I'd just like to say if there's anything new to add.
Come back on that?
Yep. Anything new to add to what's been stated?
Yes, a little bit. Okay. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the redfish exemption as it stands. I'm not as fluid at reading as both my kids here, but when I think about the redfish exemption plan, mostly what I think about is a fishery that primarily should be catching redfish, which is what the name is, a redfish plan. But what I see happening is a small mesh access for groundfish boats. I have no problem with redfish boats catching redfish. I have a bad problem with redfish boats catching groundfish. These boats can catch, I forget the exact number, 51% redfish to 49% groundfish. So when I saw these discards and like the catch distribution, and you guys are talking about bycatch and stuff like that, you guys are talking about the bycatch while they're catching the redfish. What I have a problem with is when you see these high discards of the pollock, these guys are targeting pollock at nighttime, not redfish, and discarding these small pollock. That's what this is. I'm competing right now. I'm running a 6.5-inch cod end on my boat. And I honestly believe that over 50% of the boats fishing in the Gulf of Maine and Georgia's Bank now are using something smaller than a 6.5-inch mesh. This is an extraordinary number. I don't really get how it is that these boats are able to do this and everybody is totally okay with it. I don't even know how you guys can come up with a stock assessment at this point that's anywhere near accurate. But getting back to the groundfish end of it, if the redfish boats went back to catching redfish like the redfish plan was designed to do originally, that would be okay. So I guess everybody needs a solution. So I guess my solution would be two parts. Maybe they should be catching 75% redfish and only 25% groundfish and bring it back to its original intent. And for verification, maybe when the boats have the observers on the boat, the fastest way you can see if somebody is using something smaller than the mesh size than they're supposed to be using is by the bycatch. If some of these boats are having some extraordinary numbers of bycatch on their boat, this isn't with the redfish. This is with the groundfish. Like when these boats are targeting groundfish in their Part B plan, we got to be looking at those, because they're using smaller mesh, we got to be looking at the flounders, the haddock, the pollock. It becomes really important. And whatever these bycatch numbers are, they need to be shared with the other sectors so that every single sector can see what the bycatch is on these groups of boats that are discarding these fish.
Thank you, Knut. I appreciate your input. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have one more public comment online. Jerry Lehman.
Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yes. I mean, in light of some of the comments, I mean, there's a lot of factors that we haven't been taking into account of. I mean, I know Knut and Evan have had, you know, a lot of questions. Then are there bad actors? Well, just like good restaurants and bad restaurants, I agree. Now, when it comes to the catch rate averages on some of these stock species, I'm just curious, have we been taking into account a shift in the biomass competition as well? I mean, primarily I've caught haddock most of my life, and when we saw that transition of haddock leave George's Banks, because the length weight frequency never shifted between 2014 and 2015, they were starving. It shifted west into deeper water substrates. And I think we can see in catch landing history that the uptick in haddock and a decrease in pollock, which is now a competition in stocks as well, which could be an influence on catch rate averages. That's it. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman. Back to the council. You're sorry, Lucinda, you've already had your opportunity. Trying to move forward here. Any further comment from the council? I mentioned we are looking for a consensus at this report that's been presented to you today. Ms. Ware.
Yeah, I'm happy to make the consensus statement. I don't think you want that as a motion, but I'm happy to make consensus that the report is strong. I think it included a lot of data. I feel like I have a much better understanding of this program than I did prior to it, and I think that was the goal, so I appreciate that. I think some from reflections from me, I think the report has pointed out some areas of potential improvement. I'm thinking of things like how we identify the trips and the subtrips. It sounds like there's some wishiness there we could clean up. I'm thinking about vessels on the do not deploy list for observers and if they should be allowed to participate in this program. And then I think there's a fair conversation about the thresholds, and I saw that as well in the sector manager comments on it. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about, recognizing we're not here today to debate those, but I'll lay my cards on the table a little bit about what I think could be improved in the program. So thank you.
Ms. O'Dell.
So is that a motion? Because I'll second.
I'm not really looking for a motion, just a general consensus. I think that as Ms. Ware highlighted, you know, it was a strong report. It definitely satisfied the review requirements that we had for our priority, but also the regulatory requirements. So if anyone disagrees with that, you know, I'd like to hear that. If not, I would just take this as a consensus.
I don't disagree with it, but I will say that I look forward to making improvements to the program when we talk about council priorities.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Seeing nothing else on redfish, I turn to Chair Pappalardo.
Okay, we have two committee motions to bring up. Both are aimed at asking the Science Center and the relevant peer review panels to take up previously raised concerns explicitly rather than implicitly. One of the motions is focused on the Georges Bank Haddock 2026 management track assessment, including recruitment treatment, bias correction, Dale effects, and weight at age modeling. And the second motion asks that the specific concerns raised during the 2024 Atlantic cod assessment be addressed directly in the 27 process, including WAM formulation issues, scale questions, survey biomass comparisons, and clearer numeric presentation of model differences. So I think the motions are up on the board here. You want me to read the full motion into the record, Mr. Chair? Does anyone want to hear my voice for that long?
Not really. Sorry, that was inappropriate.
No, I asked for it.
No, I appreciate that. And I mean, there's two extensive motions here, but where this letter is going is the gentleman sitting right next to you. I would ask if he actually needs an official letter or just a complete, you know, just an understanding of what we're asking for would satisfy that. And I would ask the council, does that satisfy your concerns getting it to Dr. Hare?
I guess that's to you, Dr. Hare.
Yeah, we don't need a letter. I'm sitting at the table. We've read the motion. We understand the intent, and we will do our best to meet that intent, as we do with all council motions that are either directed to the Science Center or related to the Science Center.
Thank you. Mr. Pappalardo, would that satisfy your concerns from the committee?
I feel like I did my job as the chair of the committee, bringing the committee motion forward to the council. We've had our conversation. I think, unless there's somebody at the council table that has an objection.
To the council? Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. I just want to add a little bit more context. I did connect with Dr. Hare after the Groundfish Committee meeting and talked about this, and with some other Science Center staff, and collectively we're appreciative of the committee talking about the assessments in advance of the assessment work, trying to kind of really show that the council is interested in engaging with the assessment process, not just reacting to it after the fact. So thank you, Dr. Hare, for recognizing that the committee made these motions, but kind of more broadly that the council is interested in some of these topics, specifically, you know, what's coming up quickly is Georges Bank Haddock, but across the board with the cod stocks as well. Thanks.
Thank you for that. Ms. O'Dell.
Yeah, so just to jump in on Georges Bank Haddock, you know, there's obviously there's each management track has terms of reference, and this highlights terms of reference number 6, where respond to any review panel comments or SSC concerns to the most recent prior research or management track assessment. We wanted to make sure that the issues that came out of those reports were, you know, front and center. And there was a little concern that the, you know, the plan for the Georges Bank Haddock assessment that's online right now doesn't really recognize all that was raised as a concern before. So I think we just wanted to make sure that that was front and center. Also, with the opportunity to weigh in on, you know, the assessments for 2027, again, just wanted to make sure that the issues that were raised by the SSC and the peer review that we had an extensive discussion about as a council were, you know, under a bright light of the stock assessment scientists in time before moving forward with those planning for those assessments.
Thank you, Ms. O'Dell. And like I said, I think we've highlighted it definitely here. There's been other discussions, and I appreciate Dr. Hare's response that they do intend to take these on as required in the term of reference. Thank you. With that, I will turn to Chair Pappalardo. Anything else for Groundfish?
Well, here, no further discussion, Mr. Chair. The committee has completed the review requested under the priority, and the council, through consensus, has accepted it today. We've dispensed with the two other motions from the committee. So I have nothing further to bring forward from the committee unless Robin has anything.
Ms. Fried?
Okay, we're all set.
No, I think that concludes the Groundfish report.
Yep.
We have some Groundfish for other business later.
Yeah, I was going to address that. So under other business today, it's my understanding we will take up the issue of the window pane, southern window pane again. And I'd just like to take a moment to thank and congratulate the PDT for putting together a pretty exhaustive analysis and review of the redfish exemption program. And good luck to you, council, as you decide how and why to prioritize this program next year.
Thank you for that. Since we are a bit behind, just want to give to take the break now, allow people to check out if they need to, 10 minutes, and we will come back with Dr. Ford's report on NTAP and survey efforts from the Science Center. Thank you.